Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game.
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni.
Float game for the win. Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here, Jim Coyle.
Welcome, welcome, welcome into the Friday edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. I'm the coach, Shannon Griffith. Maybe Jim Coyle will join us a little bit later today, but glad to have you here with us. If you're with us via chat, glad to have you here. Are those listening statewide? We are appreciative of you tuning in to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Lots to cover today. And of course, one of the big things that outside of some of the other sports that are going around outside, but college football seems to be the one right now that's occupying the minds of many, whether it's the Indiana Hoosiers or some of those that may like the Purdue Boilermakers or even the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. The state of Indiana has two top-tiered national programs this year, again, with Notre Dame and Indiana being those two programs. So it is going to be an exciting time here in the state if you are a lover of college football, and it's going to be an interesting season for both of those teams. But looking at Indiana this week, they're getting ready to finish up their third week of camp. They do have a practice today. So one of their rare Fridays that they've had, they just took a day off yesterday. So they'll go today and tomorrow with their practices. Their next scrimmage, I finally found that out, is going to be Tuesday, the 25th. And at this point in time, I do believe today is going to be the last time the press is going to be, it's the practice will be open for the first 15 to 30 minutes this morning. But the next scrimmage is on the 2nd, and they're starting to solidify their depth charts. They're starting to, you know, really hone in on who needs to be special teams players that can contribute. Which first-year guys are going to find their ways to the field. Those are being settled right now, and next Tuesday will be another opportunity for those that are in between to have another productive scrimmage to show they belong. So a lot of things happening here over the next couple of weeks, because after this week, you are basically 2 weeks out from your start, or week out from your game week. And that's going to be fast approaching. And I would say with Coach Cignetti, by the time next week at this time, I wouldn't doubt if they're not working towards North Texas and their camp mentality has broke and they're getting themselves prepared for their quote unquote in school schedule. Because I think Indiana starts classes, if I'm not mistaken, I'd have to look it up again, but it's coming close to school starting. All the campuses are starting to get kids on it. So very exciting time in and around college campuses statewide. And also, you know, what have been some of the surprises of this camp? We'll talk to Alec Lassley here before he goes out to practice and get some of his opinions on that. I know that number one, Josh Hoover, I think from all practical purposes, has had a very good camp on the same trajectory that Fernando was on a year ago. And they feel that, you know, he's right on point where he needs to be. And also with that, there were some, I think, some scouts at camp last couple of days, and they talked about Josh Hoover and what they've seen of him since he's transferred from TCU. And he impressed a lot of them where he's at in his development under Coach Cignetti and Tino here at Indiana. So that's a positive step forward in that regard. But again, we'll chat with Alec Lastly about that a little bit. We won't have Zach Osterman here today, again, conflicting with this practice today. He won't be able to join us. And like I said, Alec will be here to join us here in a short bit, but we'll get Bill Bender in that second hour for a couple segments, and we'll get to dive into some things there with Bill. Of course, the transfer quarterbacks, who are the ones that he is kind of pinpoint as being the ones that are the right fits at the right programs. We'll talk a little bit about an article he did on the 30 movies that are the best baseball movies. And that will be interesting to talk to him about. It's a great list. If you have a chance to go check it out real quick, you can do that. And then, of course, again, we'll talk a little bit about the Raiders and Texans last night. Of course, Mendoza did start the game, and he got the first half reps, and he was 8 of 15 for only 86 yards. He had one big blunder, interception. Unfortunately, that went back 80 yards for a pick six. And, you know, again, I'm sure he'll be the first to tell you, you can't do what he did there by throwing the ball late over the middle, and it was behind the receiver. And therefore, it ended up in a Texan's hand, and he went off to the races. So he played that first half. Now, he rebounded from that, did pretty well. Roman Hemby, very active in their special teams as the kick returner. He also got six carries last night for about 27 yards. Ian Thomas, three receptions for 19 yards on three targets. EJ got a little playing time, one reception for him. Now, I did not see Aiden Fisher in any form or fashion because there was no statistics recorded for him. So I'm not quite sure there what the scenario is or isn't, whether he was dinged up or they just wanted to get other guys' looks. I do not know there, but again, we'll take that and make of it what we want. But again, he's had a very good first outing there with the Texans in their first week one. But again, that Wade Woodaz jumped Mendoza's pass and returned it for 80 yards for a pick six. After that first drive, that Fernando was moving it pretty good, and he made one mistake on that drive. But after that, he didn't come unraveled. He got his composure, as we have seen Fernando do many a times, and got himself back into the swing of things and actually did pretty well there in the latter, you know, the rest of that first half. He had a couple drops, guys dropped some balls that were, you know, big plays, and unfortunately that was it for him. And then they went to Aiden O'Connell, who had a great second half and actually led them to coming back in that game, because they were down 20-3 at halftime and come back and win it 22-20. And a lot of that was due to Aiden O'Connell. So, you know, the Raiders, about like the Colts, they feel like they've got three bona fide quarterbacks at their disposal and such. So they're going to utilize them as they see fit. But again, I do think the next preseason game, they will probably start working Cousins in a little bit. I still think they'll get Mendoza as many reps as they can, because these are all valuable to his development and growth as we progress towards week one of the season. And we know that he is probably going to be a backup to Kirk Cousins and such. So, hey, we're going to step aside here for our first break. When we come back, we'll hope to have Alec Lastly on here from thehoosier.com. More of Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio this morning. I'm sorry, this afternoon. I'm already behind on Friday, if you can imagine that. Now joining us from thehoosier.com, Mr. Alec Lastly. Alec, you're muted there, so there you go. How are you today, Alec?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Great, man. I know that we're in a little bit of a pinch in time, so we'll get rocking and rolling because you are on your way to head out to the practice this morning. I keep calling it that. I'm stupid to say that, but anyway, how is this week of camp in your mindset? How has it flowed for Indiana this week? Really, according to what you've heard from Coach Cignetti, as well as some of the things that you guys have been able to write about this week.
Yeah, I mean, look, at this point, it's more or less crunch time for any kind of position battle, for kind of figuring out depth, right? I mean, they have one more week of fall camp, but you know, you don't want to go into that final week of fall camp still trying to figure things out. We've heard whether it was last year in the fall or even heading into this year that towards the back half of camp, whether it was Kurt Cignetti or Mike Shanahan, they've talked very, very frequently about the last 2 weeks of camp is really when they install a lot of that additional prep work, because they figure out kind of what the ones and the twos look like. They figure out kind of where the depth is. And so you want to go into that final week really understanding, okay, you know, where's the good core of, you know, my snaps with each position group coming from. And now I can start to layer on top of that, you know, kind of more emphasis on, you know, specific plays, more potential packages and personnel that you can put out there and really kind of fine tuning the details. So look, I mean, it's a critical kind of wrap to week three today. I think there's still question marks around, you know, who is starting opposite of Jamari Sharp at cornerback. I think that's a critical position that they need to really, really, you know, kind of put in cement here over the next couple of days, whether it's Rylan Gandy or AJ Harris. And then I think there's still questions about, you know, what, not from a negative point of view, right, but what this defensive line rotation is going to look like. And it's going to look different week one versus, you know, week five and then week 10. But I think the critical part is, you know, how frequently do you want to use Kellen Wyatt at linebacker versus stud, right? He has the versatility to play both. We've heard Kurt Cignetti talk that, you know, in specific personnel, he will be at that linebacking position. So, you know, how is that going to start to look? Because you still need to kind of figure out what that flow is going to be from a defensive line standpoint, because obviously they have bodies upon bodies upon bodies. The depth is not the issue. The talent is not the issue. It's more or less just what is it going to look like, right? And that's a good problem to have, but nonetheless, it's still, you know, something that you're working through. And then I think, a critical position, but maybe something that's not, you know, talked about a lot, is really how the backup quarterback is going to get finalized. And, you know, we've had, you know, 2 years now of very, very good backup quarterback play, right? You know, say whatever you want about Taven Jackson throughout his career. He was a very, very valuable piece 2 years ago, obviously started against, I believe it was Washington, you know, helped Indiana win that game and looked, you know, looked good, obviously not as a full-time starter at, you know, at this level, but looked like a very quality backup. And then last year, obviously what you had with Alberto Mendoza, you know, both Fernando Mendoza and Curtis Rourke did not need to leave the field much when they were on there in less blowouts. But you would like to have the confidence in your backup quarterback if needed, right? I mean, Fernando Mendoza goes down in the Big Ten championship game. Two plays, right? That's all you needed. But you still saw that there was confidence in what Alberto Mendoza theoretically could do if he needed to play, you know, longer. I think, you know, it's going to come down to Grant Wilson entered fall camp as the backup there based off of what Kurt Cignetti said at Big Ten Media Days. Tyler Cherry consistently is shown the ability to get over that leg injury that he had a year ago. And the rehab that he had last year has really kind of, I think, catapulted him into a confident summer and fall. He's looked very good, obviously, you know, very physically built out player, still very young and inexperienced, obviously, but I think there's some potential there. And I think that this next week is going to be critical to figure out, again, going into the season, who is going to be that number two. I mean, Grant Wilson has that experience in the system and obviously a seventh year player, but the ceiling is not there from a guy like Grant Wilson, like it is Tyler Cherry. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of wraps up. And then obviously tight end room, You know, we'll see what happens there. I think that's going to be by committee for the majority of the season, but still a lot of, you know, major storylines to kind of follow as, you know, week three wraps up today and you get into, you know, 2 weeks before the season opener.
Yeah. And I looked at the schedule today. They do have one more scrimmage left on the second, on Tuesday. I'm sorry. So that will be their last kind of dress them up and hit them up before they really start progressing towards North Texas prep and a regular school schedule following week. So it's fastly approaching. There's no doubt about that. I kind of agree with you at quarterback. I look at Grant Wilson as the guy that can get you out of a game. Then you'd have to make a decision if necessary on who you go with from that point forward. If Tyler Cherry, they think is ready and gives them a best shot, then he'll use them. If not, you know, I think they feel comfortable with what Grant Wilson brings to the table. And from all practical purposes, from what I've heard, I mean, he's not done anything that would say cost him that position of being number two. But you're correct with the ceiling aspect between him and Tyler. So again,
and,
that's a
sport. I mean, from that standpoint, I mean, make a good point where it's, you know, yes, the ceiling right is going to be much higher with a guy like Tyler Cherry. But at that same point, you know, hopefully you're in the situation where you don't need that backup quarterback to go win you a game, right? I mean, this is very, right. You know, you look at the talent level across the board on this roster. It's not like you need even Josh Hoover, right? I mean, he's going to be put in situations where he's going to need to make some big time throws and make some big time decisions to win games, keep possessions alive, right? We saw that from Fernando Mendoza in the big games last year. But theoretically, right, when you're looking at a backup quarterback, whomever that may be across whatever program, even in the NFL, you're adjusting things in your playbook to make sure that you're not forcing them to go out there and try to win you a game. So from that aspect, right, I mean, you probably feel a little bit maybe more confident in what you have with Grant Wilson because he's just so experienced, right? I mean, you see, you know, 7 years across college football, you just that is a type of experience that you don't gain in, you know, 2 or 3 years even. And so from that aspect, right, you probably are going to side, I think, a little bit more with Grant Wilson. But I also think you're going to see a lot of snaps when possible for Tyler Cherry early in the season to get him acclimated back into live game settings and acclimated to getting hit again, you know, with opponents, because that's a guy who I think there's still a lot of potential there and there's still excitement around what he brings. And that he's obviously shown that in the 2.5 weeks here in fall camp with his progression.
Yeah. And that's why Tuesday will be a big day for him, because he's probably going to get a lot of opportunities on that day to do a lot of things. you mentioned Josh Hoover. I was seeing an article. I think it was put out by a pro publication that Scout was there and was comparing to what he saw of Hoover at TCU to what he's seeing now. And he says he's greatly improved from where he was at TCU and where he's at now under Cignetti. You can see an air of confidence in him that he didn't necessarily know if he had or not. I guess what you say, I guess he would say, and you can maybe answer this, is Josh Hoover feeling more and more comfortable in this Kurt Cignetti, Mike Shanahan offense?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the biggest thing is all the details, right? I mean, from footwork to getting through your progressions quicker. I think both of those aspects, he looks – and, right, I mean, this is still a system, an RPO-type system that he's comfortable in, right? I mean, TCU, I think, was either second or third in terms of percentage of plays of last year that were RPO style, right? So right behind Indiana. So it's not like he's learning an entirely new style of play. And I think that's helped him, right? I mean, Curtis Rourke, Fernando Mendoza, right? They were coming from programs that did not run that same style of play. So you're already ahead of, in my opinion, he was already ahead of where those two were, just strictly style of play, right? So then you add on kind of the raw ability that he has from just a talent standpoint, clearly more talented than Curtis Rourke and Fernando Mendoza from a pure talent aspect, right? The mentality and the mental side of the game and the ability to get through the progressions quicker and really dive into all of the minor details that seem minor, that build on top of each other, that become huge details, is really what separated Fernando Mendoza. His ability to watch film, break things down, his ability to be just so focused on the here and now, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing, is mentality that really separated him. I think you see a guy like Josh Hoover, and I think it was in the Big Ten Network when they were here last week, when Josh Hoover said that Tino Cinceri basically told him to kind of kill the old self, kill the old Josh Hoover, because, you know, you're coming into a vastly different role, vastly different team with vastly different expectations. So you can't, yes, you can rely on the experience you had before, but you're also going to need to kind of makeshift and kind of remake your identity as well, to make sure that you are, you know, 100% focused on the here and now and moving forward. And I thought that was interesting, right? Because he's obviously a super talented, experienced guy coming in. But I think that the two biggest areas, to get back to your initial question, is how he's been able to get through his progressions quicker and the footwork. I think those two aspects are something that have really stood out in kind of the limited settings that we've been able to see him in kind of a live situation. And look, I mean, you can see the clips that they put out, that Indiana puts out, right? I mean, he doesn't have to be perfect with his throws, because he has guys like Nick Marsh and Charlie Becker who can, you know, rearrange their body in midair to get a ball that's maybe a little thrown off target. But at the same time, I mean, the throws that Josh Hoover are making are Fernando-esque in terms of those back shoulder throws that were so iconic last year, almost every single big time drive and big time throw that were needed. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing that we see all year, is just, you know, from game to game, drive to drive, throw to throw, how is he getting through those progressions? Can't hold on to the ball too long. So how is he getting through from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, and then just not to have happy feet in the pocket, right? He's a mobile quarterback who can move. You know, sometimes that's something that's a negative, right? Because you want to then get out of the pocket and move a little bit. But this offensive line should provide the stability and the confidence for Josh Hoover to be a lot more relaxed than what he was last year. And I think that will then translate into less turnover worthy plays and less turnovers from that aspect. So, you know, Josh Hoover's been terrific so far. I think he's more advanced than what this staff thought that he would be at this stage. And I think there's a lot of very, very cautious optimism and almost anxiety about getting to that first game because of how good he has been, even from dating back to the spring and the way that he's progressed through the system up to this point.
Well, Zach, I mean, Alec, I'm sorry. You got Zach on my mind because he ain't going to make it today because he's in the same position as you. But Alec, I appreciate you joining us here. I know we're up against the time limit here for you to get out there. So, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you more next week.
No, I appreciate you, Shannon. Have a good one.
All right, partner. Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com joining us here in a rush so he can get some of the practice things organized for himself today. And, you know, I had a couple more questions that I would love to ask, but, you know, if everyone that is listening, wherever you may be, if Indiana had to play a game tomorrow, which position group would you feel the best about, and which position group would you have great concern about? That's a good question to ponder, because we're going to step away, take another break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that specific question with everything else we got today coming up. Bill Bender a little bit later, but for now, we're going to take another break. We'll be back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio on your Friday as we help get the weekend kicked off wherever you may be. I hope those that have been impacted by these recent rains and flash floods, I hope things are starting to turn upward and things are going as good as they can be, but we are thinking of you. And of course, you can't go a day without seeing something in the news or in print about some of the devastation that's happened in and around the state of Indiana, but more importantly, up in the Northwest and in East Central Indiana. There has been some significant flooding and damage from storms. So again, and high school football starts tonight. Friday night's lights kick off around the state. However, there are some games that have been postponed due to schools still being closed, power outages that have kept them from getting back into the classroom. And then, of course, the flooding that has occurred. Don't know how many per se, but I do know that up here in Northeast Indiana, there is one game that I know of was Gary Westside was to play Fort Wayne Northrop here in Fort Wayne tonight. And that game has been postponed due to up there in Gary still without power. So hopefully they can get everything up and running and these kids can get back to normalcy and playing high school football next week for those schools that had to postpone their games tonight. Appreciate y'all joining us here today, whether you're listening on the radio across the state or joining us here on our YouTube stream. You got a question, put it in the chat. We'll try our best to answer it as we go along and take care of it. But before that last break, we talked about which position group you would feel most comfortable with if Indiana had to play tomorrow and which position group you would have concern with if Indiana played tomorrow. And I think if there was one group that I would feel definitely confident about, and if you were able to catch the Hoosier tailgate last night, and if you didn't, you can find that up in you on YouTube on the Hoosier.com's YouTube page, as well as Hoosier Football Tailgate YouTube page. I'd say the position that I am most confident about is definitely the defensive line because of the amount of bodies they have there that can play. They have at least 10, but with Wyatt and Daly, they're going to be pretty, pinpoint, I guess, accurate when they guys start returning because they want to get them build up to, game speed, so to speak. And those two are probably in about a week to week and a half behind everyone else. However, when you look at this defensive line, and we said it from the beginning, probably one of the best defensive lines in the Big Ten and potentially in the country when you look at it from A to Z. So that is a group that I definitely feel great confidence heading into week one. If Indiana had to play tomorrow against North Texas, then the position group that I would have concern with or great concern with, looking at it, I would probably say just because they're all young is the tight end position offensively, because you've got Brock Scott Schott, who is a sophomore in his, category, played some at Miami of Florida last year. And then Gibbs, the kid from up in the region, who is also a pretty good player. I think he reminds me a lot of Nowakowski. And then I think it's Barker, if I'm correct there. But those three guys are all young. Barker's the second year, Gibbs first year, and then Brock's a second year, but only Brock has had the snaps in a live game when he was at Miami last year. So youthfulness, yes, concern because of the youth, but as far as confidence in those three, I don't think there's anybody within that offensive side of the ball that doesn't have confidence in those three guys, even if they have to platoon them. I think they have great confidence in them. And I do think Brock is going to be a heck of a player And I do think Gibbs is going to add, you know, his thing to it. And so I, those were the two positions that one I'd feel positive about, one I'd be a little bit concerned with, but not because those kids can't play. It's because just youthfulness in that respect. So other than that, I think Indiana's got a solid team, A to Z. Even on defense, I do think this defense that Indiana and Coach Haynes has right now probably maybe better than they had a year ago. And that's saying something when you consider the production that has gone out of the lineup. However, with the experience they have back at defensive line, what they've brought in there experience wise, then you've got Jones and Hardy back at the linebacking positions. Both are wily veterans in their own way. Hardy came out on the scene last year, played lights out. And of course, we know what Jonesy did in terms of his relentless pursuit of the quarterback when they turned him loose. So you got to feel confident with those two bodies back there. And then in the secondary, although they're trying to find that one corner position, whether it's AJ Harris or Gandy, they may play two. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at that if that's what happens, because I do believe both those kids can play. I think the biggest thing with them has been consistency. And again, you know, that's one thing that everyone's big on is consistency. And that's what Coach Cignetti has always meant by saying he fights complacency on a daily basis, not just with the players, but the coaches as well, because he's looking for that sustained consistency and process that they want to get out of every practice. And some of those guys are a little bit short on that at times. And then the other young man that's there we know can play is Byron Baldwin. And he's the guy that would play the star position or the nickel, you know, DB, if you want to put it that way, safety. But I do think that that young man has every bit of talent to be a dominant factor. And I look for Indiana to probably play a little bit more of a 4-2-5 scheme as opposed to what they were a year ago, where they were probably more a 3-4 scheme. Now, both are interchangeable because you can get to both by doing this, you know, sub here, sub there. But because of the depth that they have at defensive line and being able to get four legit guys out there that can turn it loose and then have four more to come in behind them, I don't think there's any question that they may be more of a 4-2-5 structure defensively this year, more so than they were a year ago. But that's purely hypothetical on my part when it comes to that. But if you have a group that you feel confident in, go ahead, put that in the chat, or a group that you're still concerned about, by all means, put that in. Would have to agree with you, Dave. They are also well coached, and you can tell that about any position that is out there on that field. They have a great coaching staff at Indiana, and these guys are very attention to detail oriented, and they are what Coach Cignetti wants day in, day out. And when it comes to going through their process that they have in place in terms of what he expects on the field and off the field, because the meeting space is just important, especially this time of year, than the out on the field. So, but I think that's a good question to have in front of you. And I hope to get, you know, Zach's opinion on that, but we'll get it another time when he gets back here and has a chance to come back and be a part of the show. But one thing, I don't know if you heard this or saw this this week, I should say. And this really happened and came out last year after the national championship game about Fernando Mendoza's recruiting when it came to his recruitment when he was still at Cal. And it was really coming down between Georgia and Indiana at the time. Well, this week, that was explored even more. If you ever happen to watch Bussin' with the Boys, that has a YouTube channel, podcast, they had some of the Raiders out there on the stage with them, I guess you could say, Kirk Cousins being one of them, and this subject matter got brought up. But to fill everybody in on this process of what was going on, there was no question that Georgia had offered Fernando more. I do think that in itself was very interesting to hear Fernando speak to. He didn't give a dollar amount, but he did talk about that. And the one thing that I would take from that is that when the decision was being ready to be given, I guess you could say, Fernando had basically came to the conclusion that this is the way he was going to go. And he was used to having Coach Smart call him later in the evening, as opposed to earlier in the evening, due just to the time difference, you know, him being in California, and then, of course, the Eastern time zone. And so what Fernando ended up doing, this was the day before he actually made his final commitment, and it became Indiana's direction. But the night before that, he had all but called Georgia, Coach Smart, to give them the answer that he was going to Georgia. And Kirby Smart missed the call. Fernando did not leave a voicemail. So when that all had happened and occurred, Fernando basically just determined that maybe it's best to sleep on it one more night and then really make the final decision the next day. So when the next day approached on this, he was talking with his parents, and Mama Mendoza basically said to him, what are you going to do? And he had mentioned that he thought he was going to go to Georgia, and she said to him, we'd rather see you at Indiana. So Miss Mama Mendoza gets the recruiting win for Coach Cignetti, and that is what you would say. The rest is history. He committed to Indiana. He became a Heisman Trophy winner, the number one draft pick, and won a national championship, all because Kirby Smart missed the call the night before that would have changed everything in the minds of those that were recruiting him, because he would have gone to Georgia, where he was being offered more money to go. So that is just one of the craziest stories in recruiting, and I've been around some of them, but that is one of the craziest ones I've ever heard, because now that that's known, I would imagine Coach Smart has been taking some heat about that and making sure that that phone of his is, you know, on his person 24/7, 365. So I did think that was a unique aspect that they brought up. And again, that story is not new. It was out after last recruiting season, and Bussin' with the Boys brought it back up with all the Raiders there. Of course, Kirk Cousins and some other of the Raiders were there. And if you missed that segment, and you can find it, it's very interesting to watch. But again, last night, Fernando did have had a rough evening, 8 of 15. He had 86 yards. He had a pick through an interception that went for a pick six. And therefore, you know, he didn't have as good of a game, I would say, than his first week. But when you look at the other guys that played, I said Roman Hemby had a great night. He was returning kicks. He looked good there, of course. He had 6 carries for 27 yards. Ian Thomas, 3 receptions for 19. EJ Williams, he had another reception, this time for 6. So EJ's getting some opportunities, but did not see any statistical stats recorded for Aiden Fisher, and I did not see him. So I don't know if there was a situation there that hey, they weren't going to play him because they're going to get other guys some spots to look at, or, you know, they wanted to make sure that if, you know, if he got dinged up or something, they didn't want to put him in jeopardy of becoming hurt and being a chance to losing him for the season. So, but again, Fernando, again, being a rookie, that mistake, even though he's second game in the NFL preseason, you just can't make that mistake, throwing late back over the middle under pressure and having the pass be off and behind the intended receiver, because those type of misses in the NFL will hurt you, because, you know, you talk about an inch with everything with that. Okay, let me see here. Good. I'm glad. I was a little bit worried when I didn't see anything for him. And so I appreciate that update there, David, about Aiden, that he did play. And Brent, appreciate that as well. Him having six tackles. So I didn't see him the times that I was watching, but of course, when Fernando kind of got removed from the game, I wasn't as engaged. And I was looking for stats and I just didn't see any for some reason. So I'm glad we cleared that up, that he did play and there's nothing there for him in terms of injury, and played, it sounds as pretty much like he did the first week. So that is a good thing to see. And I'm glad that you guys got me straight on that. So everything good there. But again, plenty of Indiana Hoosiers that are throughout the NFL, and the Hoosiers that were with the Raiders and Texans last night. Again, getting opportunities and opportunities to show what they can do. And that's all you can ask at that next level. But again, back to that mistake, you can't make it. But what I liked about Fernando's play in that first half, and again, we've seen it before, when he made that bad decision, it did not impact him the rest of the game. He didn't come unraveled. He didn't get happy feet in the pocket. You know, he ultimately came back and had a pretty good half of football, because I think there was one time in that game he had completed six in a row, and there was at least two drops that I saw that would have been big plays had the receiver caught it. And so the positive is, makes a mistake, he rebounds from it, gets back up on the horse and goes and plays the way you anticipate him in playing. So again, pretty darn good there. And then he worked predominantly with the second unit at the offensive line. And I know Houston played some of their starters in that first couple drives, I think, and he was under pressure. There's no question about it. And I think he only ended up giving one sack. But I did see the maturity you look for in a quarterback. If it's not there, line up, throw it away, line up, play second down. Or if you're in a position to get back to the line of scrimmage to negate a negative play, you know, you see those things. And I do think Fernando, from that standpoint, is on point where he needs to be in his development. And this next game, we'll see how many snaps he ultimately gets in that. So anyway, with that, we will keep an eye on that as well. And of course, we'll look forward to getting more of his games broken down as we go through the year with him, as see what ends up happening with his playing time. I just, like I said, I don't not think, he will be the starter. I think Kirk Cousins will be, and it'll be a great mentor, and they've got a great relationship. So that is all a great thing to see in that respect. So honestly, couldn't be too disappointed in his play last night, and even week one, even though he was critical of himself in that respect. Well, we're going to step aside, take a quick break here. Hopefully when we get back here, we'll start getting into the second half of this show, as well as getting Bill Bender on and talking to Bill some. But we will be back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio on a Friday. Hope you are enjoying your kickoff to the weekend here today and getting prepared for some of you, I'm sure, for high school football, which starts tonight throughout the state of Indiana. Of course, I will be doing a game here in the Fort Wayne area, and it involves Bishop Dwenger taking on Indianapolis Ron Colley, which is a rematch of the state championship game from last year. So looking forward to being the color man on that tonight and getting the high school football season kicked off, because to me, that means college football is right there around the corner. So again, pretty happy to see some of that starting up and excited to get high school football underway. And then, of course, like I said, in another week coming up, they're going to be starting into their game week for Indiana as they get ready to take on North Texas on Saturday the 5th, which, again, is a noon kickoff. And Big Noon from Fox is going to be on site for that week one matchup, which, again, is a great thing to have on your first game of the year, having that national exposure that Indiana has. And I think it's going to be an interesting time to have them involved with it, of course, and the excitement that will be around the Hoosiers in that respect. So really appreciate that aspect of things. So again, if you haven't got your tickets for that week one, I don't know how many are left, but I hope that you can get in and get a ticket for that game, as it will be a good one to see. Well, we're very fortunate to have our friend from the Sporting News now joining us, Mr. Bill Bender. Bill, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Coach. Hey, Shannon, how you doing, man? Thanks for having me on. Just fixing my camera here. Sorry.
You look great. Yeah. You look great. No, I appreciate you coming on, because Indiana had a practice today that took Zach Osterman out from our schedule, understandably so. And we only had Alec Lasley, a kid from the Hoosier.com, who also covers the Indiana Hoosier football. And those two got, you know, kind of slighted on time today. We got Alec for about 15. And then we, of course, Zach and was there because this is their last open practice to the media. And it was today. And so when it's the last one, you better be there to get what you need to get, because Sig is not a guy that I would call overly friendly opening practices up to the media in that respect.
Well, you know, in old school, and good on them. Zach does, you know, I listen to Zach on here. Obviously, he does a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah.
Covering the Hoosiers. He's as in-depth a writer and a nice guy. You like having people around. So I appreciate the hustle from Zach. I'm happy to step in. I know we I've got a little bit of an interesting day going on here at Sporting News. A little bit of a cross between interviewing coaches and players and appearances. Because I, as you know, I mean, and they probably know at Indiana starting today, it's like Monday's like a game week for teams starting Monday. You know, we have week zero coming up, and then you're getting the rhythm of that. So it's coming.
Week zero. That's right. I'm more locked into Indiana's schedule for that particular reason, but yeah, I forgot about week zero fastly approaching. And of course, in state of Indiana tonight, high school football starts. So we've got everything in that is near and dear to my heart, getting ready to rock and roll, which is a good thing. And, but yeah, I forgot about week zero. Indiana, they've only got one scrimmage left, and I think that's going to be next Tuesday. And then they will transition probably into game week prep for North Texas by next Thursday. I would imagine. And then, of course, you're in the game week. So I can't, how many games are on that week zero this year. I didn't see it, and not to put you on the spot there,
no,
but
I know
they've added quite a bit more than they usually had, because that week zero, there may be one,
right,
but you would always see a FCS game because they would, you know, be on that week to kind of get themselves some exposure. But I didn't see how many games were on this week.
There are eight on next Saturday on week zero, eight games, which is more, like you said. Obviously, the headliner being TCU, North Carolina, and Dublin, which should be a lot of fun. You know, obviously, a lot of attention will be paid to Bill Belichick. We're working on some things to get ready for that. As one of your commenters said, USC will be the only ranked team in action. USC plays San Jose State, I believe, on, I want to say, ABC at 3 early in the day. So we get that first look at the Gary Patterson defense with the Trojans. And then you have to stay up late, because I'm going to tell you why. At 10 p.m., you have a little gem on the schedule between Memphis and UNLV. And you may say, why would I stay up late to watch Memphis and UNLV? You may be looking at a playoff team there, because I think that's a huge piece in the G6 puzzle of who's going to get that G6 playoff berth. And, you know, UNLV and Dan Mullen have done a nice job. Memphis, today without Ryan Silverfield, those two schools typically get after it. So there are plenty of reasons to watch next Saturday. And I know I'll be in front of the TVs treating it as kind of like a soft opening for week one.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, UNLV lost their starting quarterback from last year. He left and went into the portal and went to Nebraska. His name's escaping me at the
Calandria.
Moment.
Yeah.
Anthony, yeah, that's Calandria. It. Calandria. Yep. Good quarterback. He's at Nebraska, and I know they feel very confident of what he brings to the table. And I know he was a pretty good quarterback there at UNLV, because he has the ability to keep plays alive and does a pretty decent job of protecting football. So that will be definitely interesting. I wanted to talk to you about a couple things here, and then we've got, of course, plenty of time to get to it, but all the subjects that I want to hit. But the first one, I know this week the AP poll came out of their preseason top 25. And like every year, it creates a round of debate about why this or why that. And I've always said, in honesty, you might as well take it and throw it away, because the reality of it is, until you get to week three or four in the season where you've got better data to evaluate and to rank teams, you're going to get a more true picture then than you are now, because this, a lot of it's a crapshoot, and you guys do the same thing with what you guys went through. Of course, Indiana being ranked number 6, first time a national champion has not been in the top 2 of the AP in 15 years, I guess, as you'd say. But the other one that was unique, and I didn't know this, first time the Big Ten has been 1-2 in a preseason poll since like 60 years or something like that. So it's been a wild number. So what did you take about the AP poll versus even your own poll and the coaches poll and all that? You know, I know you guys kind of did a story comparing the both of them, but what was that you learned or, you know, found interesting or comical, however you want to put it, in those two things?
Well, I think we have Indiana. I don't think. I know we have Indiana number one in ours. So, you know, the way I kind of view the AP poll is, I have a ton of respect for all the writers. I'm a little bit different, Coach. I enjoy the polls. I do. And it's part of the job. And, you know, you get to, you treat it like, I always tell people, you treat it a little bit like a stock report. You know, like, you're reading the stock. I don't know much about that. I probably shouldn't say that. But, you know, you just kind of see where everybody's at. So it's not like set in stone. You know, this is going to change at the end of the season. But I think putting that number next to the name makes it more fun. You know, the NFL doesn't have, for example, last night when I was watching the Texans and Raiders, it doesn't say 15 versus 21. And that's what I love about college football. You have a number. I would have Indiana and Ohio State 1 and 2 in any order. If you want to have Ohio State 1, that's fine. But if you want to have Indiana 1, that's fine. I think those are the two teams in the Big Ten, and Oregon's right there. I'm a little surprised that Oregon had the commanding number 2 in these polls. And then you get into, you know, Texas and Georgia. One of the things that stands out to me, if you look at the first place votes between the coaches poll and the AP poll, Big Ten teams, Oregon, Indiana, Ohio State, they combined for 120 first place votes. I think the SEC didn't have a vote in the AP and combined for something like 9 votes total. So between Georgia and Texas, that tells you right there the power of the Big Ten's Big Three.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I wouldn't, I'm not critical of it. It's just, it's there for debate, right? I mean, you're going to have different people that have different takes on it. The one thing that I took out of it was when you look at the AP poll and even the coaches poll for that matter, to a certain degree, that those first 5 teams, the one thing that stood out to me the most, they all had returning quarterbacks and probably the majority of them will be Heisman Trophy candidates because you have like CJ Carr, Dante Moore, you got Sand from Ohio State, and, you know, just to name a few along that, Arch Manning from Texas, of course, was in that as well. But that's what stood out to me was that, okay, these teams have the big time quarterback returning to a team that also has A, B, C, and D. You know, in Notre Dame's instance, but with CJ Carr returning, pretty good offense coming back for him, but their defense should be really good when you look at it on paper. And so I don't know, does that play a part in your overall evaluation and stuff like that? Or, you know, what is it that you kind of critique or look for in some of those respects?
Well, I think the top 7's interchangeable on some level. You know, you can make a case all the way down to Miami, who those were the 7 teams that received first place votes. I think you said it with the quarterbacks. That definitely has a huge influence on the rankings when you have 5 teams that have the quarterbacks back, all among the Heisman favorites. And then the 2 that don't, that played in the national championship game last year, and it's Josh Hoover and Darian Mensah, who also very easily could be in the Heisman race. One of the parallels between Miami and Indiana to me is this is the 3rd year in a row both teams in the 12-team era have played quarterback roulette, so to speak, whatever you want to call it. But Indiana hit on Rourke, hit even more on Mendoza, and then now you have Hoover and you're trying to hit again. You get into Miami, they hit on Cam Ward, certainly. And then they go to Carson Beck, who's looked good in the with the preseason so far. They hit on him. And now you bring in Darian Mensah, who has had success in 2 different systems. So it tells me, Shannon, that you have 7 really good quarterbacks on those 7 teams, which makes it very easy to pick any of them to win the national title. Like if you sat here and we had somebody on that said, I really like Georgia and Gunnar Stockton and, you know, that defense and what they have on the back end. Okay, there's a reason to love every one of those 7 teams. Every one of them also has a question, certainly. You know, if you look at Miami, for example, how do you replace Reuben Bain and Akeem Mesidor? So I think that's what makes it interesting. We're going to see it all on the field pretty soon.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing, Ole Miss has a great one coming back. Chambliss, that kid is the bona fide big-time player. And, of course, he got the extra year. But I guess looking at this in comparing to yours, was there any surprises in this AP poll that you're like, interesting that they put them there, or where you may have had a team ranked outside of Indiana, of course. I mean, we know that you guys had Indiana at 1, so that's a difference between 5 spots. But again, anything that popped out to you that was interesting from the AP in poll per se?
You know, not really surprised at all. It's how it really comes down to how you stack up those SEC teams outside of Georgia and Texas. They have Texas A&M at the front. You mentioned Ole Miss. You could put them at the front with Trinidad. Oklahoma, LSU, Alabama, all teams that could be part of that run as well. So, you know, I think any one of those SEC teams fits. They do have Texas Tech a little bit higher, so there's some faith in them to win the Big 12. And then, you know, obviously it stacks up with that Big 10 second-tier corridor of teams. USC, we have higher. We have 10. Mm-hmm. I'm a believer in the offense. I like Lincoln Riley's confidence. I am a believer that Gary Patterson will make a difference as well with that defense and maybe push them. The trick with USC, though, with that schedule, is they are going to have to beat at least one of Oregon, Indiana, or Ohio State. They play all 3. They also play Penn State, so the Trojans, and they play Washington. So their schedule is also loaded. The funny thing is they play in week zero, then they play on Friday night on week one, and there's a good chance USC is going to be 2-0 before that first full college football Saturday. That's pretty crazy to me.
Yeah. You know, the other question I think it comes into this as well is kind of when does the week which week do you say the preseason poll is kind of irrelevant in, you know, in terms of moving forward? Is that like week three, week four? I mean, where is that for you in some respects?
Well, you know, it's just, like I said, it's just a baseline. I like checking up around midseason, you know, that week of October or so. You kind of go back and look and be like, all right, where is everybody now? Where were they in the beginning of the season? And then you catch some of the risers. But the thing is, I mean, I don't know. I don't anticipate a ton of movement with that top seven. I just don't. I think all seven are capable of doing, you know, having great seasons, maybe making a national championship run. I don't know how many losses they'll have. Now, the trick is, you know, Indiana and Ohio State play. You know, USC, I mentioned, plays all those teams. The SEC will have some attrition. Miami has Notre Dame on the schedule, not till November. So, you know, you're going to get to see a lot of these matchups in the regular season. But, you know, like you said, I think I look at it at the end of the year, and it's always just a research tool to say, okay, we missed on these teams. But, you know, this time last year, Penn State and Clemson were top 10 teams. And, you know, Clemson finished 7-6. Penn State fired their coach. They ended up playing each other in the Pinstripe Bowl. Nobody had probably anticipated that at the time.
Well, Penn State, I think, in some cases was ranked number one, if I'm not mistaken, in some of the polls out there. But, again, yeah, I as a coach, as a former coach, you look at it, oh, interesting. But we all know it. What matters is when you put the ball between the white lines and you play. And if you take care of business, those things will take care of themselves where you end up going. I mean, look at Indiana last year. They weren't in even close to the top 10. And they came out of nowhere and won it. And the same thing will be true this year. If they hold serve up until the Ohio State game at home, October the 17th, and they would beat Ohio State, I got a pretty good feeling that come Sunday, they will be the number one ranked team in the country. And that's not, you know, that's not a big guess on my part, I would say.
No, but, and Ohio State plays Texas in week two.
Yeah.
You know, they have that, Texas early in the season. That's a pivot point game. And then that Indiana game for the Buckeyes is part of a three-game stretch where they play at Indiana, they play at USC, they have a bye week snuck in there, and then they play Oregon at home. So it's just a brutal schedule for the Buckeyes, who, you know, are built to handle it. They have an unbelievable team coming back on both sides of the ball. But, man, I mean, when you're playing that schedule, there'll be no excuse. And I think one of the things that, you know, you're already seeing it being written about, the loser of that Texas-Ohio State game could easily finish 9-3. And then are they going to be left out of the playoff at that point, even though they play, both of them have tough schedules. Ohio State's a little bit tougher than Texas. So we'll see if that debate comes up and flares up again. I anticipate it will.
Oh, yeah, the strength of schedule debate. Oh, the SEC is already laying the groundwork for that because they, you know, they were trying to make that point during the SEC media days about the strength of schedule and how it should be applied. And a 9-3 team can be better than a 10-2 team if the strength of schedule of the 9-3 team is much better than that one. So yeah, they've already laid that groundwork. And that's always, I mean, they've been beating that drum for a little bit now, but anyway, again, I think it's enough of that. Put it in the trash can for a while and let the games decide who's going to be the ranked teams and, you know, who's going to hold serve, because it's a long season. And like you said, there are tough games. Indiana's the same way, you know, they go Ohio State, Michigan. You know, in between that, they've got Minnesota, then they got USC, you know, and somewhere in there. So they got a tough road too in front of them. So it makes that October what they call championship season for a reason, because that's usually when the big games start to be played in conference and stuff. Like this article to change speeds though, and I have to talk about it because it was great.
Okay.
Bender's 30 greatest baseball movies.
Oh no. Yeah.
I loved it. And if you guys haven't had a chance to take a peek at it, it's a good read. But you know, when you look at that, I mean, what kind of stirred the debate in that aspects and, you know, started, you know, think about making the writing about that. Because when you think about it, there are quite a few baseball movies out there, and they all in their own right are great to a degree. But what kind of pushed you to do something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it was based on, you know, the Field of Dreams game was last week. And, you know, I'm kind of our, in the office, our resident sports movie guy. I've probably seen, you know, of the 30 movies on that list, I've seen 28. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've seen most of the baseball movies out there. It was fun to put that together. So what I did, and our methodology, I like to have a formula for everything we do. So we kind of took the Rotten Tomatoes ratings, which I never fully agree with. Then we took the popcorn meter. Then I put my own rankings in there and averaged the three, or totaled the three, and that was our ranking. So people that will say, you know, Pride of the Yankees isn't the greatest baseball movie, you're entitled to that opinion.
Sure.
But according to Rotten Tomatoes, it's a movie that had, you know, like 11 Academy Awards. My favorite baseball movie is Major League, and it's not close. It's by far my favorite. Now, you know, the 80s, that decade produced unbelievable run of movies. Field of Dreams, Bull Durham, Major League, Eight Men Out. That's another movie I love.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. It's the thing about Eight Men Out, and I've watched it several times. The guys in the movie look like the real life people. It's crazy. Like Ring Lardner was the sports writer, looks exactly like him. The guy that they get to play Commissioner Landis looks exactly like him. It is uncanny in some aspects. And, you know, that story was great. So I love baseball movies. I think the one that kind of got cheated a little bit, The Sandlot's one of my favorites. And I can't believe Rotten Tomatoes had the rankings as bad as they were.
Yeah.
You know, for The Sandlot, that's an American classic, in my opinion. I've watched it so many times, I know every line. So I don't know what your favorite baseball movie is. The reaction we got is, what I found out is everybody has a favorite baseball movie, and it's not, and they're going to stump for that one harder than anything else, which made it a fun list to put together.
Yeah, right, right. Well, the list is The Pride of the Yankees, which is a 1943 movie. Of course, Bull Durham 2, Moneyball 3, Field of Dreams 4, Major League at 5, 61 at number 6, The Natural at number 7, another great movie in terms of, you know, baseball lore. A League of Their Own, again, a historical movie in that respect. The Bad News Bears, cannot leave the Bad News Bears out of there, of course. And then you had number 10, The Sandlot, in that respect. But, you know, you talked about Major League being one of your favorite one when it came to that. But you've talked about how that kind of resonates with Cleveland a little bit, and it resonates with, you know, being the working class baseball. I love the movie too. I could watch that movie anytime it's on, and it's been on quite frequently here of late.
If it has. Major League 1 and Major League 2 was on the other night, and I found myself like, man, I'm not going to change the channel. I want to watch this again. It's unbelievable. I think the cast of characters and I always tell the story with Major League. When I was young, my dad, he passed away years ago, but I remember one of my distinct childhood memories was how hard he was laughing at the scene when they arrived for spring training. And, you know, it's like Dorn comes in and Taylor comes in and Serrano comes in and Rick Vaughn's last. And we all know what the assistant coach Pepper says there, but it's one of the hardest I've ever heard my dad laugh. And I just knew that was one of those memories that I have. And, you know, the baseball movies, like the other one, Coach, Field of Dreams was on the other night, and
yes,
whatever point it's on, I'm going to watch it through. And I think there's differing opinions on that movie, which surprises me. I think it's just a classic. It's a little, you know, sci-fi-ish, but such a great movie.
Yeah. And then the other thing with Field of Dreams, they just had that, you know, the game, the Major League game that was just played, and Netflix carried it live. That was on there. And Schwarberg had a pretty good game that day. He kind of knocked a couple of them out. But I'm, you know, the other one I like on here, of course, Bull Durham. You know, I think that chronicles the old vet who's been bounced around the different minor leagues and things of that nature, and he's on his last leg per se. And then, of course, Moneyball is another good one. But again, great list. Had to bring it up for a little bit of discussion. And I'm sure everybody has their one that they like the most. But again, you know, some I heard in there about Mr. 3000. Where's that, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But
if you were a kid, I was a little bit older in the 90s. So I was like getting into my teens by the 1990s. They also had a run of like kids movies that were baseball movies that were really, that still endure. I mean, Little Big League, Rookie of the Year, and Angels in the Outfield. Angels in the Outfield was on the other night. And I watched it for like, I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched for like 45 minutes. I mean, those movies, they were, they really had kids into baseball. I think part of it is too, and I was explaining this to my son, because we don't want to go too far down this discussion, but I think baseball in the 80s and 90s, I was telling him, it was as popular as the NFL, at least with kids, you know, like we all played baseball. We all grew up playing baseball. Now that's not the case. You know, it's the NFL first. And, you know, I think there've been less baseball movies as a result. There's some good ones out there. You know, Moneyball is probably the most recent one that really resonated with everybody. And it is a good movie too, but it was a change. That was the change. I think all those 80s and 90s movies were a product of how popular baseball was. Unfortunately, and my dad would qualify here too as well, when they had that strike in 94, it was just such a bad thing for the sport, because I think it impacted the next generation of baseball fans.
Yes, no question about it. Well, hey, stay right there. We still got Bill here. We're going to take a quick time out and come back and talk a little bit more about this, a little rapid fire to see which ones he would choose over one or the other. And we'll get to that when we come back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, kicking off your weekend as we have Mr. Bill Bender with us here from the Sporting News. I'm the coach, Shannon Griffith, and we have been talking about the 30 best baseball movies, an article that Bill has on the Sporting News. And if you got a chance, go read it. But here's a quick couple rapid fire questions. And this is just pick them, you know, pick one or the other. Field of Dreams or The Natural?
Field of Dreams.
All right. Major League or Bull Durham?
Major League.
Moneyball or 42?
That's tight. I liked 42. I did. Okay. I'll go 42.
Okay. Sandlot or the Bad News Bears?
Okay. I'm going to go two sentences here. My answer is the Sandlot. But one of the things about the Bad News Bears that I think is incredible, that movie was made in the 70s. And any generation today, when a team looks terrible in any sport, they say it's the Bad News Bears out there. And I think that is an incredible, you know, legacy for that movie, which is also, if you watch it, there's a lot of things that might not go over well today, but an unbelievably funny movie. But I'm still taking the Sandlot.
Gotcha. And you know what's unique about those movies, and maybe not the Bad News Bears, because I can't remember if they've remade that or not, but most of these,
they remade it with Billy Bob.
That's right. But most of these movies have not been touched, and that's the way they should be, because trying to remake them, they're such classics in their own right that I'm not sure they would do justice to it. And I don't think the remake of the Bad News Bears necessarily did it right either, but that's the day and age we live in with Hollywood now. There's a lot of remakes, so hopefully they stay away with it from. But who was your favorite movie character in a baseball film?
It's going to be a weird choice. So I mentioned Major League, and I have this theory about the movie that as you get older, your favorite character changes. You know, like when I was a kid, like everybody loved Ricky Vaughn and Willie Mays Hayes, and then you get a little bit older, and then you're like, you know what? I really liked Serrano. He was just cool. And then as you get older and in your 40s, you like Jake Taylor's the glue of that movie. I think that's what's perfect. The best character in that movie, though, is by far, as a sports journalist, it's Bob Uecker as Harry Doyle.
Oh, yeah.
Every line is funny. Everything he says. I think one of the things about Major League and a lot of these baseball movies, and you're seeing the comments in here, and it affirms my thing, is the quotable ones stick out the most. I mean, there isn't a week that goes by where I don't, maybe there's no way there's a month that goes by where I haven't quoted Major League to a friend. You know, I haven't sent him something that was like, you know, even something Lou Brown says during the movie, or, you know, it's an unbelievably quotable movie. And so is, you know, I didn't really talk about A League of Their Own is an incredible movie. And Tom Hanks and Gina Davis are unbelievable in it. There's a lot of quotable material in there, obviously. And that's what makes these movies special.
Yeah. And I agree with you. You know, and I look at that movie and it has its parts where it's very funny, and it's, you know, because of the comedic, actors that are in that. But at the same time, there's a serious undertone to it about the history of women's baseball. And during that time period, how it kind of boosted the morale of a country that was at war, and a lot of the baseball stars were fighting it, you know, and that was the crazy thing when you think about it. And Fort Wayne had one of those teams in it. Right. And it is a great movie in that respect. But yeah, the quotes of the major leagues still live on today. And Bob Uecker's has a bunch of them. Ball eight, he's walked with bases loaded. How can they lay off such good pitches?
I sent that scene. I can't believe you just said that, because I sent that scene to my friends when I was watching it the other night, some of my buddies. And I said, you know, the most remarkable part is, you know, you go all the way through, and then Lou Brown, he's like, by the time he goes, I think you can go get him now. I lose it every time. It's so good. Even Major League Two, not as good, but I'll still sit and watch it, you know?
Yeah. That was, it's not a throwaway.
Yeah, I went and saw that one in the theater and remember being real excited and then a little underwhelmed when you left, but still rewatchable all these years later. And I know, you know, the amount of discussion that article created told me, like, we've done that with like golf movies or football movies or auto racing movies, but no genre of sports movie hits harder, I think, than baseball. Because everybody's so opinionated about it, and that's what makes it. It's kind of like college football, right? It's kind of like the AP poll when everybody has an opinion. Yours can never be right, but you know, I've learned over the years, just to have fun with it, don't take it too seriously, and make sure you know, when somebody disagrees, like if you and I were disagreeing about things, as long as you do it respectfully, even if you don't do it respectfully, you know, it's part of the job, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, and there's no crying in baseball is another great famous quote, Tom Hanks in that movie as well. But yeah, it was, like I said, when I was reading it, it, you know, just you start getting lost in the memories of watching it and going back and, oh man, you know, this scene or that scene. And then some of these movies have been on of recent, you know, Major League, Field of Dreams, you know, you name it. And I find myself the same way. It may be 11 o'clock at night, and the next thing I know, it's 12:30 and the movie's over. I'm like, what did I just do?
Right. I do that all the time. Yeah.
I know. I understand. Let's jump back into the world of college football. But I thought that would be a good change up because of its value to everyone in baseball movies and things of that nature. But, you know, transfer quarterbacks has been the biggest thing that you could say in college football now is kind of the biggest item in a portal is who's the transfer quarterbacks, and then ultimately who gets them, of course. And then you had one article out too this week, or maybe last week, I can't remember, but the most compelling quarterbacks that you found via the transfer portal or being transfers this year. And, you know, what about that was intriguing for you to jump into?
Well, I just think we talked about Mensa and Hoover, and they're not the only ones. I mean, they're the two most impactful in a lot of ways because of the teams they're coming back to. But I think when you get into, you're looking at like Drew Mestemaker. He goes from North Texas, where he led the nation in passing yards last year. Perfect fit with Eric Morris, his coach, who I think is one of the up and coming coaches in the sport. Mm-hmm. So I think he'll have numbers there. You know, Sam Leavitt at LSU, does he make Lane Kiffin's engine go in Baton Rouge? He coming off the foot surgery. He's another key quarterback in this race. You know, we've kind of become desensitized to transfers in some ways, because I think part of it is the number that have won the Heisman Trophy in the last 10 years, the number of that have led national championship runs two of the last 3 years, whether it was Will Howard or Fernando Mendoza. You can call them one and done quarterbacks, whatever you want. But, you know, like Fernando, for example, he'll always go down as a Hoosier. You know, Will Howard had a fantastic career at Kansas State before he went to Ohio State, but I think he'll always be remembered as a Buckeye.
Yeah.
You know, Baker Mayfield transferred. So, you know, you go all the way back to like Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield. I'm missing one in there. Caleb Williams. He transferred from Oklahoma. So I'm a little, it doesn't impact me as much, but I'm just always interested. I've always thought the guy that transfers, you'll get more out of him the second year in the system, but you're seeing that less and less because these guys are able to come in, contribute, play at an extremely high level like Fernando and Will Howard did the last two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana, had Eric Morris not gotten the Oklahoma State job, high probability they would have faced off against Mustermaker in that first game of the season had he stayed at North Texas, hypothetically. Right. And like you said, he had a phenomenal year. Kid was a walk-on. I mean, he was a walk-on that wasn't even on the depth chart, per se, when they came to camp. And he just came out of nowhere because Morris knew about him. And the kid, you got to hand it to him. He lit it up, and we'll see what he can do at Oklahoma State. But I agree with you about Morris. He's kind of one of those next up-and-coming guys that you kind of have to take a, you know, keep a watch on. But, yeah, there's a lot of other ones that, you know, Penn State, he brought Rocco from Iowa State. And again, that was a good bring by Matt Campbell there. Alex Gulish brought his quarterback, Byron Brown, too, with him at Auburn. So you're seeing some of these coaches that get hired at another place. And if they had a really good quarterback where they came from, high probability that young man's going with him too, you know, and that's kind of an interesting dynamic that's kind of entered into this. But, you know, which of those quarterbacks do you think inherited the best situation to go into?
Well, you know, I think Hoover probably because, and I think one of the interesting things Kurt Cignetti was talking about at Big Ten Media Day was, and I don't know what the level of shot at TCU it was, and I don't know the relationship between Nettie and Sonny Dykes, but you know, there were some veiled shots taken there, I think. And but what he said makes sense to me is they're not gonna ask Josh Hoover to go throw it 50 times. That's the way TCU plays, though. TCU plays that up tempo. We're gonna throw it 50 times, live with the mistakes, go from there. Right. I think they're gonna try to get a more efficient Josh Hoover around their running game, which will be substantial. You know what? The best thing I like about Indiana going into this year is the trenches on both sides and how strong they are up the middle on defense. So they're going to play, like Kurt said, they're going to play defense. They're going to run the football. They're going to put him in positions where he has to make those throws like Fernando did. And you know, you have Nick Marsh on the outside, you have Charlie Becker. So there is enough around Indiana for him to have a lot of success. You know, he had better numbers coming into Indiana, at least more experience, more numbers than Fernando or Curtis Rourke. And I think that's the intriguing part, that if he has that bump in efficiency, he'll be in New York. Like, I'm not even close to not afraid to say that. Like, he absolutely will be in New York if he has that kind of production.
I was reading in a pro football publication, and it escapes me where, but you know, there's been scouts in and out, of course, at Indiana. When you put eight guys in the league, they're going to come back and take another look what you got. And one of them was comparing what he remembered of Hoover at TCU to what he saw of Hoover at Indiana. And he said it was night and day in terms of his development and what it was and where it is now, throwing the ball, how he fits in the offense and all those things. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. Like you said, he comes into a good situation, but a comfortable situation for a quarterback because, like Sig said, you're going to have a defense that's going to be tough as nails. You're going to have a running game because they're going to run the football. They're a 60-40 team for the most part all last year. So will he have to make plays at quarterback? Absolutely. There's not a quarterback on your list that will not have to make a critical play at some point in their season, and maybe more, that's where they earn their keep in some respects. So again, I kind of agree with you on that one about the situation. I would say Mestemaker too would be that, because he's going with familiar coaches and he understands the system. It's not relearning something. So that was the other one that I thought, I think him and like Rocco both, just from a comfort standpoint. Now there's always the continuity question, right? You know, can they work with the receivers there, so forth and so on. But understanding the system, understanding the head coach gives them a real big advantage when it comes to stepping into a leadership position. You know, that's kind of what I thought on that one.
Rocco is an interesting one, you know, because I want to know what the transition looks like from Iowa State to the Big Ten. And I say that because I've seen him play against Iowa. You know, I've seen those fist fights with Iowa in that rivalry game. He's played a ton of football. He comes with the comfort of having Matt Campbell around. And Matt Campbell's a hell of a football coach. I can't wait to see him operate at Penn State.
Absolutely.
They have a strong running game, too, with Carson Hansen and James Peoples, an Ohio State transfer that I think is a potential breakout candidate this year in the Big Ten. So if you have that running game, you got to – I mean, without saying it, you could say the Penn State talent's probably a little bit better than the Iowa State talent, even though all those Iowa State guys are coming over. And I want to see how all that mixes against a softer schedule. It's been talked about, well documented, that Penn State doesn't play Indiana, doesn't play Ohio State, and doesn't play Oregon. So they could be that kind of fly in November where they're sitting there at 9-1 and we're not quite sure about their strength of schedule. But I know Matt Campbell's going to get the most out of that team. They've got a big game at Michigan. They play USC at home. I think they go to Washington.
Yeah.
So that'll be another key game in the schedule as well.
Just like Indiana's got to go out there as well. And Washington's one of those teams in the Big Ten that I think more people should be talking about. And they're a little bit under the radar in some respects because of, you know, the Big Ten, there's a lot of parity if you really go down the list of schools and where those teams are at. And I think the Big Ten has that 1 through 8 ball clubs that are pretty darn good, you know, this year. Which one of those coaches, I'm sorry, which one of those quarterbacks do you feel is under the most pressure to really having to produce in a tough environment?
Mensa, probably, because of the NIL deal, because of the circumstances. I mean, I was down in Miami. We were down in Miami, and the way that started to develop, him leaving Duke at the last minute of the portal. I mean, we were like 36 hours away from the championship game, and I'm ready to file my top 25 for the following season, which we always do. And Duke got moved around because Mensa was going to come. So I think there's a tremendous amount of pressure to uphold what Miami's done the last 2 years. Shannon Dawson's an excellent offensive coordinator. So he's of those quarterbacks, he's probably going to be pressed. I think Sam Levitt's the other easy answer just because
you're
tied to Lane Kiffin. And coming off the foot surgery, they have 40 plus transfers there and they're ranked very high. We didn't talk about them much on the AP pool part. They're kind of the wild card team in the eyes of the voters in terms of outside of that top seven, somebody you're looking at with decent national championship odds. I think a lot of that's betting on Lane Kiffin and betting on the talent that they have. One thing I don't know, and you know, this as a coach, it's got to take time. When I think 6 of their top 8 receivers on their depth chart came in the portal too. So how do you develop that timing with all those receivers?
Yeah. And that's why the summer months are so critical. When you hear coaches talk about that specifically, is quarterbacks and receivers getting together and working on timing, working on, you know, becoming comfortable with how things go. But I mean, it's an interesting list. When you look at it, you can see, maybe why somebody went to school from school A to school B.
Right.
And the other kid I would say that is under a lot of pressure would be the Brown kid at Auburn with Gulish, being at his first year there. And Auburn right now is wanting to win in the worst way, that if things don't go well, they're going to be on that kid from start, you know, and that's a tough place to go be a quarterback at, because they're going to either love you or they're going to hate you. And at Auburn, that's, you know, that's a lot of a lot of pressure that Auburn, but as LSU, same thing too. I agree with you on that one. Last thing I want to talk to you about, because I appreciate you doing this, being with us with your time, so gracious and everything, and really respect your opinions and what you write and things of that nature. But, you know, here we go again with the NCAA getting sued. And now it's gotten into the world of craziness, because what came out of Louisiana court system by a judge that granted a TRO basically to players that are of the class year 22 and had not played basically 5 years of college football, if they're eligible to do that, they can leave the NFL and go back to college. And you got some of those guys that may be free agents, or some may have been late draft picks, and they're calculating, I can go make three times as much back at school A than I'm going to make in the NFL, because I'm a, you know, bottom line player that's going to get league minimum. Right.
Right.
I'm not quite sure why this ruling came to about. I mean, I thought this was a settled case in the sense that it kind of happened with the basketball player that left the G League and went to Alabama, played, and they ultimately ruled that he was ineligible, and they basically, you know, he didn't finish the year. But what is your take on this? I mean, it's gotten to the point of almost being a comedy in aspects of it.
Stronger adjectives we could use.
Yeah, there. Right.
We won't. But I think you nailed it, because one of the things I think could have been done here is 5 for 5 can be a good thing. I do think 5 and 5.
No question.
Do your thing. Now, when they enacted it, they could have either worked with the NFL or made a waiver for those 2022 kids and said, but there's a deadline on your decision. Like this, you know what I mean? Like when they enacted that, they should, okay, you can't go to NFL training camp and play college football, because that's what everybody's seeing. And you know, the jarring part is guys that are in training camp are, you know, in the portal. So it's like, Wait, what? You know, you kind of look at that. But I think that could have been avoided. My hope is this is only a one-year thing where, you know, this happens this year and then we have some clarification. You mentioned the Bediako case in college basketball. He played a couple games and then it was over because everybody realized, you know, what are we doing here?
And
I think this year, I mean, if it's only a handful of players, like 3 to 5, you know, that end up going to the NFL training camp, coming back and playing college football, I guess this is going to be the consequence of the timing of the rule and with the courts tying everything up. I can tell you for one thing, Coach, I'm ready to talk about things that aren't in a courtroom. You know, I didn't go to college. My wife was a courts and cops reporter for years. Mm-hmm. Newspaper world. That's not a world I want to be in, but unfortunately it's part of the, you have to have that knowledge in this sport now because so many of these cases have been in the courtroom.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that this judge did was he mandated that the NCAA restore the portal for 1 week for these individuals to basically, you know, negotiate contracts with a potential suitor. And again, that kind of violates what the NCAA has done with that. And I did think this rule was settled because I remember specifically the NCAA kind of already dealing with this exact subject matter in early spring, right after the draft. And the ruling came out that if you would sign with an agent and you were a part of any type of NFL, you know, training camp, or going into somebody that their full role was to get you an NFL deal or get you drafted, you had foregone your eligibility because that was considered being a pro at that time. That's kind of how they ruled it. Well, that's what the judge ultimately said. No. You can't do that. And again, I'm like you, I'm ready to talk about something else, but you know, I get to the point now from this College Protect College Sports Act, it needs to be enacted, and all the commissioners need to not say a word about what they want in it. You know what I'm saying? Right. Because that's what's held this bill up, is the Big Ten and the SEC putting their nose in there and saying, no, we don't want that, we want this, and so forth and so on. Well, now we've got this craziness, and the only way that's going to solve this is give the NCAA basically immunity from being sued. with this Protect College Sports Act. But I don't know if you feel the same way about that. Does that ultimately, you know, shut it down right then and there with any other litigation? If we do have something that gives the NCAA and schools and antitrust exemptions and things of that nature?
I think it would help. And, you know, the Protect College Sports Act and some of the provisions in that would certainly help. And then that there's a clear separation between the NFL and college football. And one of the hard parts here is I don't think the NFL and college football work cooperatively together as much as they should.
Yeah. You know,
and this is like little things like scheduling, like the college football playoff scheduling. I think the general notion is that the NFL, they don't really care. Like, they're going to get these guys anyway, but they should work more proactively with college football to make sure the college product is good. Because if the college football product is good, you're going to get better players in the NFL, more prepared players, more well-adjusted players ready to play in the league and contribute to that product, which is very, very good. You know, I sit and watch it every Sunday, and, you know, had Fernando on last night watching the Raiders game, and we'll watch preseason football tonight because it's football. So yeah. I think the leagues could do a better job of working together, clearing some of those things up. And maybe, like, I do think they did at least a decent job with the Sorsby situation, where college did their thing and then NFL said, nope, you're not coming in the supplemental draft. So they did it without saying it out loud. They kind of gave Sorsby a punishment without saying it out loud. And that worked out. And I wish they would work well together more often.
Yeah, no question. And I agree with you wholeheartedly, because there needs to be that now in today's game because of how it's changed in some ways for the betterment of the NFL, because guys can stay and not go into, you know, unless they're a definite top three, you know, one of the top three rounds or something like that. But, you know, I know that they're probably a little leery about that because they do need bodies ultimately, I guess you could say. But does that mean a first year player is better than finding a kid that's been out for a couple of years, but also been in camps? I don't know, but I agree with you on that. And then, you know, the other thing I agree with, the NCAA, in my opinion, and I, you know, I feel in some respects, you know, they've been given a raw deal in some of this, but at the same time, they have really stumbled out with some of these rules of moving forward that, had they thought about it more and said, okay, what are the pitfalls and how's this going to be challenged? And like you said, basically came to some type of an agreement prior to releasing the 5-for-5 rule that basically outlined, like you said, if you're in the 22 class and you have the year of eligibility, you've got to make a decision by X to be granted, you know, that waiver to come back and play. But they didn't do that. Right. Where does the common sense come in when you're the NCAA with all this? And do you feel the same way that, man, they've just had opportunity after opportunity to really help themselves, and they've stumbled just as bad as everything else has happened in college football?
Yeah, you know, it would have been easy. And that's one of the things where the NCAA does take a lot of hits. They've made so many changes in the sport. One of the things I find ironic is there was such a clamoring for the transfer portal to be the way that it is. They make the change, and then it's not what they intended. NIL wasn't what we intended it to be. The transfer portal probably wasn't what we intended it to be. So it's easy to blame the NCAA for all that, but they just simply made the changes that everybody wanted. Players wanted to be paid. It's been done in a clumsy fashion where we don't have, you know, collective bargaining, for example. We don't have those things that you hear that phrase, is it sustainable? The college football will find a way. It's just, what's that way going to look like? Is it going to be a product that we all want to watch, or is it going to be so disjointed all over the place that it'll turn some fans off? I don't know what the answer to that is. I think this is one example, though. As crazy as this ruling has been, and the TROs and getting players from the NFL in the portal, I do think this is a short-term one that will be fixed within the next year, because I don't think people will be able to do it then.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate you doing a couple segments with us here today, and wish you nothing but the best this weekend as you get geared up like everybody else for the start of the 2026 season. with week zero here in a week, but we'll catch you again next week, my friend.
Hey, sounds great. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it. I appreciate all your listeners, and we'll do it again next week. Thank you.
Absolutely. Bill Bender from the Sporting News joining us here today and so gracious of his time. Much appreciated. And like I said, he's got a lot of good articles up there at the Sporting News. Get over there and partake in some of his knowledge, because he does have a lot of great knowledge when it comes to sports in general, but college sports is his cup of tea, I would say. Want to thank everyone that was with us here today, Alec Glassley, of course, and then, of course, Bill Bender, but those that had joined us throughout the week here at Indiana Sports Beat Radio, we appreciate them for being a part of it, but more importantly, we appreciate you for tuning in each and every day here and listening to what we have to say, as it makes a difference or not. But appreciate each and every one of you. Have a great weekend. High school football starts tonight. We'll be back Monday with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Good afternoon, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.